Ladies and gentlemen, you have waited all week.
Yeah, Boogie Page. Throwing it down for Leaks BMX is ready. I know I am. Check the ATB Airways. Let's kick it. All things BMX. It's a BMX show. Unlike the rest, if we need some info, they got the best. Like and subscribe. Kick back and relax. And it's all things BMX. It's a BMX show. Unlike the rest, if we need some info, they got the best. So like and subscribe. Kick back and relax. All things BMX is streaming to you. So post up on your couch, screencast to YouTube. It's gonna be fun. It will be a blast. Gotta do much, but kick back and relax. They're coming to you live from a studio, or they might be at the track, man, you never know. So don't go anywhere when my rhymes are done, cause the show's just starting, let's have some fun. I said it's all thanks BMX, it's BMX show. Unlike the rest, if you need some info, they got the best. So like and subscribe, kick back and relax. I said it's all thanks BMX, it's a BMX show. Unlike the rest, if you need some info, they got the best. So like and subscribe, kick back and relax. All things BMX got the boogeyman's back, so I wrote them this track to send some love back. JT, Melissa, Chris, and Paul, DJ Damon, kinda get it, entertain y'all. And I wonder who they'll have on the show as a guest. I bet some are good, who's gonna impress? Guess I will just have to wait and see. Let's get the show going and start the party. Said it's all thanks BMX, it's a BMX show. Unlike the rest, if you need some info, they got the best. Like and subscribe.
Welcome to episode 183, Light the Spark. We got Jake Stepanovich with us. We're all going to say his last name completely wrong throughout the show, so take a ticker. See who gets it right. We'll ask Jake at the end of the show. Jake's the owner of Spark MTB, BMX coaching. Been around for a while. Flat pedal aficionado is what he is. He's also wrote a few books. We're going to talk about them books and check them out. They're also available for instant download, so head on over to his website and take a look at them, but not right now.
No.
No.
Watch, like and subscribe, all that fun stuff. How's that?
Say your shit.
I'm sorry. I'm stuck on that. People, do me a huge favor. Reach over there with your thumb and hit the little thumbs up button real quick right
share
now.
The
just
show.
Do it.
Just share the
share
show.
It on your Facebook, YouTube, wherever. Please. Thank you. And take over, Justin.
We want to wish Steven Latchford our best wishes. He's healing up from his latest surgery. And a big congratulations to the show's supporter, Tom Johnson, for winning the 56 and over expert main event. He had a hell of a lap.
You know, I saw something about that.
Yeah, I bet you did.
Are you effing kidding me? I saw something about that. Can't get on Facebook without seeing something about
there it. There is.
Yeah, Lord. Yes. ATB is coming to you live from the Ethan Clark Studios in the busy metropolis of Heartland, Michigan, which once had an indoor BMX track and an outdoor. Chris and I are at the AOT news desk. We don't ever have really many news.
No.
But you sponsor the desk.
AOT.
Melissa, what's going on?
Yes, it's going. Sorry, kid drama.
Yeah. It's been that day.
Good. Good. Finally back to work and everybody's feeling better. So
great.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
It's back there at the
it's
gate
been the
nine.
Longest short week of my life.
Yeah.
Longest short week.
Melissa's back at her Gate 9 perch, and we're working Billy to get on the show, seeing he did a little interview while he was at Grands. It turned out awesome.
It did.
Oh, he can't hide anymore.
He can't do it.
You know, if we haven't already, we'll share that to our page after the show. So you guys can get a little Billy from Gate 9
busy.
Update.
Yeah, Danger Snacks brings you guys this week's guest. You guys, Danger Snack. It's that quick snack that's going to smack you right in the face. You guys can head on over to the website. This is the snack that's also the difference between dragging ass and hauling ass, and you can use our discount code. Say it, Chris.
I can't.
Shit show. Just get over there. You get a discount. The show's chat is sponsored by BMX Rocks Photography. She was putting in work over the week.
Oh, over at the Grands? She had all kinds of pictures. Yeah. Our Roxanne Collins.
Yep, you know, our chat question. Your favorite moment from the Grands this year, whether you were there or not. Share it with us in the chat. Put it over on our social media page. Tonight's Lightning Round is brought to you by 110 Nutrition. You guys get over. You can use our All Things BMX discount code over there. Get 10% off. And our show doesn't happen without the support of the following companies. We appreciate Die Job Apparel, Hack Shack, DB Sports, and our good friends at Ghettowear. All the links for our partners and sponsors can be found in our show notes. Yep. So head on over, check them out. Chris.
Hey.
What's going on, man?
You know, hey, you know the Grands thing?
Yeah, what was your favorite?
I thought it was pretty impressive. George today, six.
Pretty badass.
Six cups. Now, Elise has got, what, 11?
Yeah.
So he's got a ways to go to catch her. But I thought that was pretty impressive.
Mm-hmm. Melissa.
I wonder if they'll pull it off again next year.
What was your favorite part of the Grands?
Honestly, not being there. No, I'm kidding. That's not a very nice thing to say. No, well, it's funny because I've been reminiscing through Facebook on the year that we were there. And I honestly don't miss the long ass days. I think we had a great holiday at home, but I think there's something to be said for the event and the trip of like sort of your lifetime. Cause I don't think you'll get me to go again.
Well, would you say it's something you should experience once?
I would. I mean, even as a non-rider, I think it was, I mean, they organized the hell out of it. I know it's long ass days, but good Lord.
Yeah, I would not want to be in charge of organizing that. That's got to be a logistic.
They can hire Dave from DB Sports.
Yeah, right.
They need somebody. He's a project manager.
Hey, we have a guest, don't we?
We do.
We're kind of ignoring our guest. Welcome guest in.
You ready?
Sorry, folks. Yeah. Jake, welcome to the show.
Holy hell, what an intro.
We try.
Oh, yeah, we do.
Thanks for having me on. Nice to meet you, all three of you.
Yeah,
for sure, for sure. Yeah. So let's start out. We'll start out here and see where we go. How did you first get involved in the sport of BMX?
As a child of like the 80s and 90s, right? It was a big sport back then, and had magazines in the school library that I would look at, BMX Plus and whatever. And then we had a family friend that raced back in the 80s and was pretty good. He was like on the Sundance team back in the day. And then he gave it a try again, probably like 1993, 1994, something like that. And then he brought me the VHS tapes of his races. And I was like, I've got to do this. So I bugged my parents for like probably the next year. And then it was the spring of 1995. Signed up for novice, like 14-year-old novice at Rockford BMX track, and kind of the rest is history.
Awesome. So how old were you? I'm sorry, you just said that.
Yeah, 14.
14, okay.
The same year I got into racing.
Were you 14? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I was not 14.
Bloomers, unfortunately.
Yeah, I was a few years older, but yeah, that's the same year I got in.
Okay.
Pretty cool.
Cool deal.
But yeah, so I started out as novice, right? It was like the best experience. Me and all my friends from school were going up there, their families. We had like, 20, 25 people from our little hometown that would travel up there every week. If my parents or if my mom wouldn't take me, then, one of the other moms would take me. And just had the time of our life that first year in novice class. Totally sucked. But it was really fun. Like just learning how to do like the basic things, like learn how to balance on the gate, learn how to manual stuff. Kind of, and starting to jump stuff. It was the best.
Yeah.
What was your local track?
Rockford.
Rockford mostly, and then we did Elgin, and then we did the Walworth County Indoor up in Wisconsin for the winners.
That thing that the was barn. Yeah, that had a long run.
I've heard stories.
Yep.
Yeah, it was intense. You guys had the Mangler on a few episodes ago, and so I grew up racing him. We're just a couple weeks apart in birthdays, so it was like getting, mangled quite often into that first corner.
Yeah. So it was a wild time. To race George a lot, eh?
Yeah. Yep. He made us all better, though. We were, try to catch him for a long time, and then every once in a while when we would catch him, he would if we left the door open or anything, he was coming through.
Sure. Sure. Well, I think that's because my personal opinion, I guess, is, when you see these kids and they're complaining because they have to race kids older than them or faster than them, or they have to bump up from novice to intermediate, and it just makes you faster. And you can follow somebody else who's faster than you, and you can see where they're going and when they're pedaling and you're not pedaling. It makes you a better rider. I feel. I might be wrong.
Of course. No, 100%.
Yeah.
You see it all the time too. You see it in like the older age groups when, you know, people complain about pros reclassifying back to amateur. Mm-hmm. And then for that first year, usually that pro that is now amateur kills everyone, but then about a year in, then they kind of all even out to some degree, right? Mm-hmm. Like people start to pick up the pace, catch up with them, and then they kind of naturally slow down as well.
Yeah. There's something about,
I'm 4650X. We got a lot of reclassed in there. Yeah. But it's pretty neat getting on the gate when you're racing people. You had their pictures up if you've been in the sport for a while, and you've hung their pictures up and kept magazines articles of them because they still printed those back in the day. And it's neat to race them and say you get to race them. How long did you kick? Did you just do locals, or did you eventually kind of move up and go into the national stuff?
Yeah, so that first year in novice, I sucked. I was probably like the worst out of all my friends, and then. And then I did go to Grands that year, 1995. I think I made the main and got maybe like fifth or something. I think both of my other friends that were from my hometown actually made the main as well. And, I think they both beat me. And then something clicked after that. I don't know what it was, but this is kind of where the name Spark comes from. Something happened the next couple of weeks after that, and I was like a different rider. I won like my next two races, turned intermediate. And then, like, right away, I was just going so much faster. I was, like, competing in, you know, I was racing open classes and competing with the experts right away. It was kind of a weird phenomenon that happened. And then raced all through intermediate, had a good intermediate class, raced all those opens against George and all those other good guys. So that really helped, you know, help pick up my pace, and then got to the end of the year, went to Grands again that year, and intermediate, I won both classes there, and then turned expert, and then right into, you know, at the first national of the year, I went to Wichita, Kansas, I want to say, and I got second place on Saturday and Sunday in expert class, and I'm like, well, shit, you know, BMX is easy. I'll be winning this in no time, and after that, really? I tapered off real quick, and never really didn't have it quite that easy after that.
Right. Yeah.
To your question, I did the national scene for a while, all the Midwest stuff, did a lot of that, got a couple nag plates, won a few races and stuff like that, but eventually turned a pro and raced that for a couple of years. But then, you know, as you grow up and then get into cars and get a girlfriend and all that stuff, then that really kills your BMX performance, unfortunately.
Oh, yeah.
I've heard that.
Yeah, it happens.
Those women.
What year did you turn pro?
Good question. I want to say 2000.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, did all right. My performance, you know, this is kind of the fun part now that I'm a coach and I'm kind of like reflecting back on all the stuff I should have done and, you know, all the mistakes. And now that my performance was all over the board. I was mentally a wreck looking back on it. My training wasn't, you know, smart in any way. Had some performance anxiety that, you know, I probably needed to deal with to some degree. A lot of different things that I look back on. I'm like, well, I could have been a lot better, but can't do much about it now other than, you know, help other people out. And that's why I'm here.
Well, that's a good way to turn it around.
I was going to say, so you know firsthand some of the issues today's riders have because you were there.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Especially at like the lower levels. Since I've never been to the, you know, the very tip top of the sport, I've never raced elite pro or anything like that. I don't necessarily feel like I'm qualified to work with people and guide them through, you know, how to be an elite. But I do feel like I'm, you know, have a pretty good handle on things that, you know, fundamentally that a lot of people are lacking, and all the steps that it would take to get them to the point where maybe eventually they could become an elite pro.
Okay. When you were pro though, were you having fun when you were pro?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I always had fun racing BMX actually. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it was never like a drag by any means. The only time like when I, you know, you have a bad performance, that would be the only time that would really mm-hmm. suck. You'd just be, you know, mad at yourself.
Did you have a favorite national track? I mean, you got Rockford in your backyard, but
yeah, Rockford's good for a national.
Yeah.
It's a fun track. It's a good atmosphere. It's pretty level playing field, you know, like mm-hmm. you know, us Rockford locals, it helped being a local there, but you know, it was pretty easy tech from a technical standpoint. So you could show up for practice and you'd have the track pretty much dialed. So we didn't really have a whole lot of home track advantage. Probably my favorite tracks, like I did the best in Atlanta, mm-hmm. that outdoor, I think it's Cobb County, won some races there. And I was just always fast there for whatever reason. It just always suited me. Did a couple Florida races. They had some fun tracks, but nothing like that really stands out other than where I had the best success, I suppose.
Did you spend any time at the Pitt skate park?
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. We would race and then we would go there and, you know, hit the box jump and ride that bowl and stuff. Yeah. Garrett Rapp was a good friend of mine. We grew up racing together and he would always be there. Oh, I think he was like managing the place or something.
Yeah. We've had him on. It's been a minute, but we've had him on.
Interesting dude.
Yeah. Does a lot of stuff. I don't know when he sleeps.
Does some cool helmets, man.
That was one of my favorite parks that I ever got to. Did you ride any other parks besides the Pit?
Oh, Scrap. We would go Scrap. Man.
All right.
Have you ridden that?
Yeah, I did. Actually, Melissa and I went there. Yep.
Oh, sweet.
Yep.
So that was like a big hangout for BMX racers in the wintertime for sure. Like Craig Reynolds would be there. Mm-hmm. A bunch of good riders, like good freestyle guys. And then all those BMX riders would be there, like bump jumping the box jumps and doing stupid stuff. But yeah, it was a great time. I don't know if I rode any other skate parks. I was honestly pretty bad at it, you know.
Did you get to Milwaukee at the, what was the one up there? Four Seasons? I think that's still around.
That one's still around. Yeah, I've never been there though.
Oh, okay.
We go to Rays as well when that was around.
I was gonna say that was a race in Milwaukee.
You did, yeah. That was a neat one. That was I got there once before it closed. It was a neat one. Have you been to the one in Cleveland?
Yes. Yeah, that's actually what got me back into racing then. So nice. I did race pro and then did that for a couple of years and then quit. I quit for about 7-8 years. I would come back and try to race every once in a while, but you know, I would suck and I'd be like, man, that's not like how I used to be. I used to be pretty decent. And anyway, so then went to Rays with some friends and started riding, hitting those jumps. And I was like, man, this is so sweet. This is the best, right? And then that next year I signed back up and started racing every weekend and got back into it at like, you know, in 28 to 35 expert.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll be the first to invite you January 20th. We're all going to be over at Rays in Cleveland. So come on over or anybody else out there. We're going to be hanging out.
I'm writing
it
down right now. Might make that happen.
January 20th.
I'll send you the invite over. We got a birthday party we're doing for the show and our friend of ours.
That'll be our fourth anniversary.
Yeah. Something.
Fourth. 4 years old.
Oh, my God.
4 years old.
Wow. Going into our fifth season already? Good Lord.
Still toddler-like and all. Not much changes.
Is that like your Cromolly anniversary or something? I don't know.
We'll have to look that up. What are we getting each other? Comic books.
Something.
You ride other than BMX? I know getting the pictures together for your slideshow. I know you do some other riding. You do some mountain biking?
I do all mountain biking now, actually. I switched over. So I moved to North Carolina 3.5 years ago mm-hmm. and a lot of trails around here. So I started riding. I had an old junky mountain bike. I started riding because one of my friends rode. And I had a blast doing that. It was something totally different. I was still doing a bit of BMX back then in 2020. But, you know, like the world was kind of weird mm-hmm. then. So, let's see. So I think at the end of 2020, I probably did my last race. And then I've just been doing mountain, just riding mountain bikes, racing some mountain bikes, stuff like that. I tried to get back on my BMX bike, but it was just so weird going from a 29er to a 20 inch. I was like, I don't know how the hell I ever rode this bike before, you know?
Yeah.
Gave it a try, and I was like, I'm going to kill myself on this thing. So I ended up selling my BMX bike. I did buy a dirt jumper. I had that for a while. So I'll probably get another one of those, another 26 inch, and just ride that at the track. So yeah. I do want to do some little bit of racing here and there, but my main passion now is mountain biking. But what I'm really interested in now is like that interplay between the two sports. Like I've learned so much from mountain biking. Mm-hmm. That's really what's kind of helped me develop my, my whole philosophy, if you will, on training. You know, I see a lot of the gaps that I missed racing only BMX. So then, you know, like things like cornering, for instance, like on a BMX track, you have these big bank corners. You have, you know, what, three turns on a track almost 95% of the time.
Yep. Right.
So you really, like, I never spent any time getting good at turning. And that, you know, that was one of those mistakes where I got passed often. You know, I would first straight pull and then go into a corner and then, like, you know, just kind of throw it in there and hang on as much as you could. But in mountain biking, you go out there and you hit, you know, if you ride 10 miles, you might do 500 turns or something. Mm-hmm. To some, you know, easy turns, tight turns, bank turns, off camber, through rock gardens, you know, whatever, into a rut. So like I realized, like, well, shit, I better start learning how to turn. So did a lot of work on that, like learned some, just basic fundamentals again, and then went out there and now I'm pretty good. And actually, like, that's probably my favorite thing to do is, like, you know, just rip through a turn on the mountain bike. But then conversely, like, mountain bikes could learn a lot from BMX as well. 'Cause, you know, like, a lot of the BMXers come over from BMX into mountain biking, and they've got the skills. And I believe that's just because, like, you have a track and it doesn't change. It's, you have the same track all year. Mm-hmm. And you're going to get bored to death if you ride that track the same exact way. So then inevitably you start, you know, bump jumping stuff. You start trying to manual hole straightaway. You start doing all these things where, like, mountain bikers basically, you know, they'll ride over one obstacle and then they pass it and they never go back and retry that again. So they never, like, develop that skill. They never take that time to, like, session something the way that BMXers do. So, mm-hmm. So yeah, my whole thing now is trying to get the two sports aligned a little bit, like show mountain bikers what you can learn from BMX and vice versa.
Wow. So it sounds like the cool coaching itch happened. You got back into mountain biking. You've got the BMX background. So what's the one thing that hit you when you were doing the mountain biking, like, man, if I'd have known this then, how much that would have helped back then in BMX that you've taken from mountain biking now?
Absolutely. So the thing that really hit me recently, I mean, in the last several years, that's really helped my riding more than anything else I've probably ever done. I didn't learn it through mountain biking or BMX, actually. It was a case of during COVID, like all the lockdowns and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. My daughter developed some social anxiety, like, you know, not going to school, and then, like, she didn't want to leave the house and all that stuff. So I was recommended a book about, like, childhood anxiety. And so I read that, and then I read it as if, you know, I'm reading in context to riding bikes. And I was like, holy shit, like, a lot of this information that they're suggesting to kids to get over social anxiety, like, that, I bet that works, you know, for riding bikes or whatever. So I started kind of implementing a few things, you know, just like the, you know, recognizing negative self-talk, right? Like, you ever get up to the gate and you're waiting behind the gate and you're thinking, like, man, I could crash. Someone could cut me off, whatever. I could hurt myself. You know, all those things used to run through my head all the time. And that's like the, you know, the worst thing possible for your performance, right? To get up there with an unsure mind. So going through these steps of this book, I started kind of implementing that with my riding. And then, like, every time I'd go up to this new jump on my mountain bike, I would take a look at it. And then if I had any negative self-talk, right away I would recognize it. And I would go through my, you know, sequence of steps. And then it was just like one of those things that helped kind of quell that anxiety, that performance anxiety. And I've never been more confident on my bike. I'm 42 years old. I should be well into, you know, past my prime by now. And I feel like I'm way more confident. My skills are as good or better than they've ever been in some regard. And I owe that basically to that book. I think it was called, I'll find that. We'll get it. I'll post it.
Okay.
I'll do a little thing about it. But I think it's interesting for people to read.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
With the coaching, you offer online and one-on-one, and you have a ton of stuff on your website too. So I'm telling people, not right now, after the show, links are all there. Go to the website. You have great articles on there, good stuff. But what got you writing the books?
Oh, well, thanks for the compliments. So got back into racing 2010, did a season 28-35, and I ended up getting like nag six. I had a bunch of second places that year, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to start training, and I'm going to learn how to do it. And I'm going to, you know, all that stuff. So I started to get into training and, started reading books, listening to tons of podcasts, watching videos, all that stuff that you normally do, got certified to be like a trainer, all that stuff. And then I tried to work with some BMXers, I was like, going to show them what I learned. Right. And I realized quickly that I'm a terrible coach. Like, I don't know what I'm doing. I can teach myself something, but I can't teach someone else. So then I started kind of working with people for free, and then slowly started getting paid for it, started doing like just personal training and stuff. And then I had, you know, four people that paid me. And then before you know it, I opened my own gym and then had about 40 people at one point where I was doing small group personal training. I did, I coached gym class actually for like a small Christian school. So that was interesting, teaching sports to kids that were not your athletic types, teaching them how to like skip and do all the fundamentals of athletic movement and stuff like that. So I started to kind of realize like what people, you know, how people learn, started to learn how to teach people. And I realized what a lot of kids were lacking. So a lot of my focus has been on like writing from the perspective of, I would say like teaching parents how to work with their kids, because like that's what I started to get a lot of emails from parents being like, you know, thank you, you helped me work with my kid. He's never got it before. You know, some of your information helped with that. So then I started kind of writing from that perspective. So a lot of my stuff is like how to work with someone, how to teach them. As far as the books, you know, I think I first put out a few training programs, right? And I just felt like, okay, I released these training programs. It was a PDF. You click on the link, the video shows you whatever. And that was fine. But then I started writing books, and I'm like nearly illiterate. I was terrible in school, all that stuff. I have no qualifications writing books. But here we are. It comes fairly easily. But the book part of it is just to make it like more multidimensional learning thing, because some people like to read stuff, and I want them to understand why I'm suggesting to do the things that, you know, I'm suggesting. So that's where the books come from. I think I first wrote a book about sprinting, right? Like just the basic physiology. Behind sprinting, why you would sprint, and then why you would rest, and kind of like how long you should work for how long you should rest, and blah blah blah, all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
And then I did a kids program, so I wrote about training kids, and then like the different kind of age groups, you know, kind of what exercises were appropriate to try to guide parents to help the kids, so they kind of knew whether they were working with their kids or if they were like hiring a coach, like to know if that coach was training a kid in an appropriate manner. Yeah. The Youth BMX Blueprint. So that has a ton of videos. I think I have like 300 videos that I shot, and I have just a whole bunch of different exercises and like templates to create your own programs and stuff like that to just kind of guide kids. You know, a lot of parents were like, I don't know what to do with my kids. I want to have them exercise on the side, but, you know, they don't find it fun. So I had to try to find some fun exercises and stuff like that for that kids program. And then finally, I just wrote a book, finished it up about 2.5-3 years ago about gait starts. So that's probably my favorite thing I've ever done. And it's probably like my least sold thing, which is kind of crazy because, you know, everyone's like interested in how to get a better gait start.
Right.
Everyone has a theory on how to, you know, on how to coach it and stuff. But I think that is one of my, that's probably like my most, it's the first like real unique thought that I've had. It's like I've come up with this concept on, you know, from watching probably tens of thousands of gait starts, right? Like,
oh, yeah.
I looked at gait starts for so long. Like, what makes a gait, what makes that technique better than that technique, right? And it happens so quickly, it's really hard to put your finger on it exactly. And then it's really hard to teach it. So I kind of, one day I had an epiphany where I was like, that's it. I think that's it, right? And then I started looking at videos and slow motion and getting out my protractor, finding angles of joints and stuff like that, like, you know, the ankle and knee and stuff like that. And I even put it into a spreadsheet and made graphs and all kinds of geeky stuff. And then one day I was talking, I hope I'm not rambling on too long.
No, you're good. Fine. Actually, okay. Yeah, no, because, yeah, no, keep going about the starting. That's awesome.
Cool. So, one day I got a call from Sean Dwight. I don't know if you know Sean,
oh, yeah.
Sean Dwight, but he was like Sam Willoughby's coach, right? And Connor's coach, Connor Field's coach and stuff. Super smart guy. And he really, really interesting guy. And he was awesome. He just called me up basically out of the blue one day, called me from Australia. We started talking. I'm thinking like, how expensive is this phone bill going to be? I didn't even know like if I could call international or talk to someone internationally. But we started talking about gait starts and I kind of told him like what I was thinking. You know, I had this epiphany not too much earlier than that or before that, and he was like, mate, you know, you gotta check this out, right? And he shows me his sprint block that he developed. So I don't know if you guys have seen the sprint block, but
yeah.
He developed it. I'm like, holy shit, that's exactly what this is, right? So his sprint block is basically the perfect tool to teach what I'm trying to teach from my book. So that's kind of how it all came about. That really got me going. And then I compiled all this information, I got some different people to send me videos of their gait starts, some good, some bad. And I put this book together and that's the end of my story.
Well, shoot, I got all kinds of really bad ones I can send you.
Yeah, send them my way. I do want to do an updated article on that where I have some people send me some videos and I'll go into that some more. But
yeah, no, that's awesome. I definitely got to get the gait start one.
All the books are ebooks, correct? So they're
correct.
Instant download them. I have the sprint book and opens on. You did a great job. Like it's a simple PDF, so you can read it on a phone, on your computer, tablet, real easy. And they're all available on your website. You've got the interesting one I wanted to ask about was your ultimate, the screen for what I'm, your website's over here, by the way. I don't mean to be rude, but your
yeah, race, that's why we're looking your, over here.
Your ultimate race day warm up. So like, yeah. This is such a thing. I was fortunate enough last year to be in Florida for a few months after the hurricane and I met, worked with DL and I've, like this is something he talks about and I didn't realize like how important it is, especially as you get older, like warm up. That doesn't mean you just take your bike out and ride around in circles in the parking lot, but like a real true dynamic warm up. And I this popped up on the website. Just don't give all away. Just a couple things, little teaser for those watching and listening right now. What would you say would be the biggest things for the a race day warm up?
It depends how in-depth you want to get, right?
Okay.
You know, basically, you want a couple different things. You want some body heat, so however you want to achieve that. I just showed some different examples. They may or may not be the best way to do it, but go ride your bike around, put on a bunch of clothes, get sweating. That's the one thing I noticed, like, that was one aha moment I had at Grands, actually. I mean, this could have gone out last week and helped some people, but but wearing a sweatshirt up to the gate, like
really?
Behind, you know, in staging, I found that I would sit around all day, right, in between your races, yep. and literally get cold. I was cold, and you know how Tulsa can be. It can be pretty cold in staging, and I would go up there and I would ride like absolute crap. And then finally I had this thing, I was like, oh, I should put a sweatshirt on and stay warm. And that totally made my riding so much better. But literally just stay warm. So that's the first thing. Get warm, get sweaty. Tissues work better when they're warm. And then, I mean, you can get as geeky as you want. You can go like neurologically, like, you know, how is like balance? You can work on things like vision and stuff. You can start to incorporate vision drills as far as like, if you ever, you know, stand on one foot and then like look at a point ahead of you, turn your head and see what happens. Most likely you're going to fall over. So you can actually train that kind of stuff. And that's basically what we do on our bike, right? Like that was another thing that, another kind of big aha moment I had is like vision. I think vision is very underrated from a training perspective, for anyone on a bicycle, really. Like our head's moving around, it's bobbling around. Our eyes are trying to look at stuff that's coming at us super fast. We're balancing at the same time. Yeah. So there's a lot of things that go into it. And if your vision, like your vision can, not everyone's vision is accurate, right? Like some people have some abnormalities. Some people just have better vision. Some people have worse vision. I'm not necessarily qualified to like train visual stuff too much or like to really go too in depth with it, but like I've read a couple books on it and it is pretty interesting. So in my race day warm-up, I do show like one or two drills with that, just very simple things that help me, like when, especially when I feel like I'm off, like when I'm riding like crap, I'll do a couple of these vision drills. And then you can go into a little bit of stretching, just some general range of motion. I don't do much stretching, you know. Not everyone necessarily needs to be that flexible, and you're not gonna, you know, like true stretching is done, and it takes a lot of time to really like lengthen tissues and stuff like that and create these adaptions. I would say, like, you know, just generally getting, just moving throughout a full range of motion and just, you know, starting to open up that way. And then, you know, you can go like as geeky as you want. Like if I'm training people and we're in a, you know, a gym facility or something like that, I would have them start on the floor. So like we would, you know, maybe I'd have the, actually first I would probably have them warm up on like an exercise bike and then like maybe start on the floor. We would do some crawling, some rolling, and then kind of go up into like a kneeling position to like kind of stretch out the front, you know, your quads, and then do some hip stuff and then like eventually stand up. And then you go from standing, you would go to maybe like marching into, it's like a skipping kind of thing, eventually into more of a dynamic, like jumps and lateral jumps and whatever you want to do.
Nice.
So stuff like that.
That's really interesting.
Yeah. So that's all the stuff you would do like off the bike. And then on the bike, you know, it's just like develop, you know, I would say develop your own way to kind of ramp up the intensity, get out there. I like to do pump laps with my riders. I would suggest a lot of pump laps. So it's a nice way to warm up. Obviously, if anyone's ever done like a true pump lap, like, you know, it just smokes you right away. Like you'll be breathing hard. You'll be sweating if you do it right. Yeah. So you're getting some good, skills practice with that kind of, you know, with pump drills. And then just generally warming up that way, like doing some pump laps, maybe some gate starts, and then into like, you know, a little bit longer efforts or whatever to try to ramp you up and get you ready to race or to train or whatever you're going to do.
Nice. And all the books are, if I remember right, about $20-$25, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So you guys just heard, obviously it's good stuff. It's well worth it.
Yeah. Like, so we want to run through the titles again really quick for our podcast people. So the books Jake has is Gate Starts from the Ground Up. Another one is Masters Mobility and Speed. There's Youth BMX Blueprint, the BMX Sprint Manual, and then the Ultimate Race Day Warm-Up. So those are all the different books he's got. go to his website and download those.
What was the funnest one to write?
Oh, that Gate Start book.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, the children's one was cool to write the book, but then to shoot all those videos, you know, I was like, I had this big idea. I'm gonna here's all these exercises. And then I started shooting 300 videos and then editing 300 videos. And by the end of that, I was like, I never want to see anyone do a whatever, a jump again or whatever.
Right.
Right.
So, yeah. But yeah, the Gate Start book, because I was like really, really locked into that one. I really felt like I was onto something, and it's a lot of stuff that no one else talks about with Gate Starts. I've been to a bunch of different clinics, and I've seen really good riders try to teach Gate Starts, and I've seen parents try to teach Gate Starts to kids to help them or whatever. And most of the time, I think they do way more harm than good. They're teaching, you know, things like very specific things, or, like roll their wrist a certain amount and all this other stuff that I don't think matters whatsoever. That people give instructions at the wrong time. They'll overload a rider with tons of instructions, literally as they're balancing while the cadence is going.
Yep.
Stand up straight, tuck your butt, roll your wrist.
Right?
Go.
I can't think of a worse time to give someone a piece of information, you know, right before that. So basically the whole book was, how can I break this very complex, very powerful, fast skill down into little bite-sized chunks and then rebuild that back up? How can I show the parents, like, how can I nicely explain to them to shut up, like, while their kid's balancing?
Right.
And here's what to do, you know, to actually help them rather than shout commands and yell at them, pedal,
right,
stuff like that.
Well, yeah, that doesn't work.
No. That's, I've always wondered, you know, you're sitting there, like, you know, in practice before the race, and there's, you know, factory mom, factory dad standing there telling 6-year-old, you know, little boy or girl how to do all this stuff. And I'm like, how in the world do you know? You've never ridden the BMX track before.
Well, yeah.
Fair. I mean, I assume that. I guess I shouldn't assume that. But, I mean, they don't have a bike under them, and they're not riding the track right now. So I'm kind of, I guess I'm prejudging that a little bit. But how do you know what you're talking about other than something you've seen on YouTube somewhere, maybe?
I just yell pedal. Even in the game. Yeah. They're in
well,
the game.
Sometimes I need to be reminded to pedal, unfortunately. But...
yeah. Yeah. Well, I think about any other sports that I'm watching, though. I would be like watching football. Come on. Oh, what? Hit him. Go. Come on. Yeah, I don't know really what I'm talking about, but you're on a pedal bike, so I think pedal is what comes out of my mouth.
Well, yeah, and the pedal thing is funny because it's like people just yell pedal all the time, even though they're pedaling. It's like,
right.
Save that for when they're not pedaling, right? Like,
okay, right. Fair. That's a good point.
Yeah.
If you see them not pedaling, that is
then cue that.
Key.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, in the other half of that, and I've said this before, I'm repeating myself, but the rider out on the track can only about 50% of the time can even hear
probably not even
somebody that's saying anything to them from the stands.
Just going to be like, go, move your ass.
Go faster. Who do you watch that you think has the best Gate Start?
Well, you know, the interesting thing is if you watch basically any of the elite pros, they're almost all the same. I mean, by and large, they're very, very similar. You could break it down and get real geeky with it and see like the nuances in it, but I can show you, like, I actually measured, I put it in like a program and measured all the hips and knees and ankles of probably 10, 20 different pros.
Mm-hmm.
And, they're all basically the same. They all do a similar motion. And now I can take, you know, the, whatever, 26 to 35 or whatever class, novice class, and if I record their gates and do it, I will show you something completely different, right? It'll be all over the board.
Oh, yeah.
So as far as who has the best, I really don't know. I mean, like, Joris obviously is, you know, he's always in there, he's always in the mix. All those guys are so good, like, you can't make a main now and have a, you know, a bad gate start. No, everything's so good. Everyone's so dialed in.
And he makes it He makes it look so effortless. Like, yeah. It just doesn't. Well, I've watched over and over just his gates, and it's just he makes them look effortlessly.
Yeah.
There's nothing. He's doing the same thing the guy next to him is, but he just looks like he just exerted like half the energy to do it. It's crazy. Yeah.
It's insane.
So all the good guys, not only in BMX. So this is kind of like the whole philosophy behind my book is. The movement that it takes to create a good gate start is the same movement that made like Michael Jordan look effortless when he went up to dunk and move and cut and stuff like that. It's not like the amount of exertion you can put it, you know, how hard you can push your pedals, right?
Right.
It's actually relaxation. That very, very first movement in a gate start is relaxation. And that is what a lot of people are missing, I think. It's a lot of momentum going forward in the gate, but they have to at the same time relax their lower body to allow like a stretch reflex to happen, and you see like the best athletes are not, they're not stiff, they're loose, they're fast, because they, you know, they don't just extend their joints quickly, they don't just jump quickly, they relax quickly too. And that's like what, you know, Joris looks relaxed. All those guys look relaxed in that first movement. And again, you look at some of those novice racers, intermediate racers, a lot of older expert racers, there's not a lot of relaxation going on there. It's all effort right away. It's a push right out of the gate. It's like a real hard effort and tension. Mm-hmm. And you can't be fast if you're like super tense.
Dude, I'm just trying like not to tip over. That's all. I'm just trying not to tip over. That's all.
Dude, that is more crucial than you can even imagine. Like, that's like actually my book, I think, is like the very first thing is like, can you balance? First of all, are you good at balancing? If not, that's where you start. Because a lot of people suck at balancing and they're trying, like, their kid sucks at balancing, right? Yeah. And they're trying to give them like way higher order, technical cues, stuff to work on that. I'm like, no. That kid can't balance yet. Like, let's work on that.
Yeah.
Yep. That's where I'm at.
Well, I think we'll take a break here. We'll do our chat check-in. It was the chat room's been popping off over there, Melissa.
All right.
Well, yeah, our Twitch friends are busy. So this might take me a second to kind of...
Sorry.
Uh-oh. Oh, no. I don't mind. I'm going to be scrolling. All right. We're going to say, and you know, if I don't read your comment, you probably know why. Just going to put that out there.
Just leave it at that.
That's right.
Now's the time for questions.
I'm over
for
it.
Jake,
questions,
if you've got them.
I'll
put them
definitely
in there.
Yeah,
take
put them in.
That.
We have questions.
All right. Hi to Rick Carter. Thanks for tuning in. Brian Fells over on YouTube. Braden Lewis also tuning in. Low and Slow's over on YouTube. We appreciate you guys being here. Hi to our Twitch friends. I see Birdie the Cat is on here.
Oh.
And Clay 118 is also checking in. Brandon Dowler tuning in, wondering where the infamous Gate 9 Billy was. I think he tuned in later on down here.
Oh, I was going to say, he's probably still trying to recover from brands.
Well, you were talking about his interview, so let's see.
It
Robert Cardoza's tuning in over on YouTube. Kip Edwards also. I will share this one because I agree that this is epic. Kip says, "I'm here with the people's elbow."
Oh my god!
That's the only one.
Seriously?
I'm sharing.
Kip was our guest the last show we had.
That's right. Also Ride 843 over on YouTube, is a 3640 novice, currently second in the Florida State Championship points. That's pretty cool. Matthew LaRue is also tuning in. So what's up, everybody?
Hey,
Helana
Matthew.
Is also with us over on Facebook. She and the boyfriend were hanging out watching.
There we go.
Oh, she didn't want me to read this, though. She says, "What is up, my gang?" She thought, I don't know, I think that's an inside something. We're going to leave that one at that, too.
All right.
I already thanked Robert, but Robert noticed that my hair was different, so thank you very much.
Robert,
I always appreciate when it's noticed. Let's see.
You know what's funny? I did something different with my hair and he didn't even notice. No, I'm kidding.
I have a bigger close up. There's Billy. Billy with Gate 9 number plates. Sup, peeps. Was busy signing autographs. Forgot it was Wednesday. Brandon Dowler again. Sean Gifford also tuning in. Says, what's up, fam? Mike Soto, BWH for life. We're glad to hear from you. Hope things are well. It's been a minute. Rick Carter. Damon Tucson's tuning in. Says, hello, family.
DJ Damon.
Hi to Inspire the World over on Twitch. We're glad you are here. I mentioned Braden.
Man, all these people are listening?
Yeah.
We have we have 38 viewers online right now.
Yeah.
That's more than I expected for me.
Oh, not at all.
It goes up and down.
It'll bounce.
Then it gets a whole bunch of, we'll get a ton of hits, like 200-300 hits in the first week on the podcast.
Little down under friend, Matthew Boshin's tuning in, says, hi guys, tuning in this week from nice, warm, tropical North Queensland, Australia. Oh. We're glad you're here, Matt.
Someday we'll do a show from there.
Wouldn't that be great?
I'm not flying 24 hours ago anywhere.
But it's tomorrow there.
Fuck that shit. Unless he's sending me lotto numbers. It's the only way I'm affording to go there.
I don't think it works that way.
He's in the future, ladies and gentlemen.
Hi to David D'Artona. He's over on Facebook tuning in. Ride 843 over on YouTube says when he's on the track, he can't hear a single thing.
No.
Mick Mezzaline says hello, ATB from AOT, California. Thanks for coming back. Tim Weiss is tuning in, and actually I think this question is coming up in the notes, but about asking Jake his opinion on pedals versus clips.
Oh, we're going there next.
We'll come back to that. Hi to Nick DeSanti. He says, sup everyone. Jeremy and Cynthia Thompson are tuning in. Jake is the best coach ever.
So wow.
One of your fans there.
There we go.
Nick said, tell Jake Skyway Nick says hello. He should remember me from when we had him on Rail the Berm.
Yes, sir. What's up, Nick?
Yeah. We thought we remembered you being on there a time or two. Let's see.
Yeah.
Braden Lewis says he's got some riders you can come study. Mike Melvin tuning in says, howdy, everyone. Another Twitch viewer, Out There Artist, says, hey, Dad. I'm assuming, is that your other daughter?
That's Amanda. Yep. Yeah, the birdie one's Amanda, and then Clay is their friend.
Okay.
So
we're not sure about the Inspire the World, huh?
No, I don't follow that one.
Jeremy Crow tuning in. Congratulations on your big win, by the way, Jeremy. Super proud of you. He says, where can I buy one of those elite gates? I'm not sure which elite gate he's talking about, but...
We got books you can buy.
we're talking
we're
books
selling
tonight.
Books here.
We're selling books. On...
That's the first step.
Yeah, there you go. William, almost through. William Prince here says, what's up, my BMX buddies?
Prince.
James Cordova says, howdy. Damon Sprague says, what's up from Helium Racing?
What's up, Damon?
Hey.
And I apologize if I missed anybody, but that was a lot to scroll through. So I think
that was a lot there.
I think I got everybody. Thanks for tuning in. If anybody's got any questions for Jake, I can still get them to him. So go ahead and put those in the chat.
Thank you, Melissa, and thank you to BMX Rocks for sponsoring our chat check-in.
Yeah, make sure you go check them out. BMX-ROX.com. So BMX Rocks Photography. So, Jake.
Okay, wait. I'm sorry. One more.
Got one?
Okay.
David, you made me laugh, so I'm going to say it.
Oh, jeez.
He says the Twitch handle, Inspire the World, might be Turbo's new handle.
Oh, my God.
All right. That's it. No more. I'm not saying any more because I was already bitching about it this morning and this afternoon and this evening, so it's done.
All right.
Yep. We're good with that deal. All right. So, Jake, we hear you're called the flat pedal aficionado. So what's your feeling on flats versus clips?
Let's bring the heat on this one.
So, yeah, I thought this one was kind of laid to rest by now, but
No.
Yeah. So, this is another one of those things that looking back, I went on to clipless pedals way too early in my, you know, BMX career, right? Right away, but basically as early as I could, I was on clipless pedals. And I think it kind of hurt me to some degree, right? And then I started noticing, watching a lot of the younger riders, especially like when they go on to clips, they rode completely different than like all the other, you know, all the elites or expert riders, all the really good ones. They developed this weird funky style that they could only do on clipless pedals, and I was like, man, that I just don't think this is going to be good long term, right? Like, you know, you don't see anyone with this technique that carries that on up through an elite pro. So basically I just, you know, I lobbied pretty hard to that we should, you know, think about this with kids, especially. Like, I'm not like so old school that I want everyone to be on flat pedals, although like I wouldn't care if they were, but it was probably a better time in the sport when we were all on flat pedals, but I don't think it really matters here or there. But I do feel like the younger kids being on clipless pedals, especially right away, was one of the dumbest things we've ever done as a sport. So especially now that kids, you know, like back when I was like growing up, we would go ride a bike all the time, you know, literally like all the time, right? And right. Now I don't see kids out there riding around building trails quite as much as we did. So I would race in clipless pedals and go out and practice in clipless pedals, but then I would do, you know, I'd go ride trails and flat pedals and stuff like that. So I was still able to jump and everything, but like, I've worked with kids that were pretty decent expert racers, like, you know, from a winning perspective, like their performance was pretty good, but like their skills were crap. And if you took them off of clipless pedals, they literally couldn't jump. And you're like, you can't jump or bunny hop, but you can go out and win a national and expert class. That doesn't make any effing sense. Right.
Right.
And those kids usually fizzled out. They never went beyond about 15, 16 years old, because you know, 14, 15, 16 years old, you're going so fast that you need to have these skills to negotiate a track. You need to have the proper technique to get through a rhythm section over a set of steep doubles or whatever. You can't rely on this pedal pumping weird technique thing. And so that was my big movement. I really pushed for that. Mm-hmm. Also, like, I don't believe that there's that big of a discrepancy in performance between flat pedals and clipless pedals. And I've tested myself. I've tested some of my riders and other people to prove that. Like, it's a fraction of a second to 30 feet. And I'm not even joking. It's a couple inches, like, consistently. If you're a good rider. If you're a bad rider, if you suck at pedaling, then clipless pedals make a big difference, because it masks that poor technique. So I think rather than just throwing clipless pedals on, how about you go out and learn how to pedal is kind of my thing. And I had one more point to make, but I forgot it. So we'll leave it there for right now.
So you're a big fan of the rules they've put in place a few years ago now. No clips in the novice class. Was it 12 and under? No clips, whatever class, right? I believe is the rule now.
Yes. Yeah. For sure. It was like the best thing they've ever done, in my opinion. And I think we're seeing the fruits of that coming through now. Like, you're seeing a lot. There's a lot of freaking good young kids. And like, you still see these like little kids that are jumping stuff and like look stylish and they're riding well. It hasn't hurt that. I can't tell the difference between 12 years old and 13 years old or 14 years old, other than they're a little bit taller, you know?
Right.
Oh, I was going to say, so, you know, back in my day, right? Back in my day.
way back when.
Yeah. In the mid-90s, when the pros were mid to late 90s, they were starting to switch over from flat pedals to clipless pedals. There was still a lot of people, like, you could not tell a difference, really. It wasn't like someone threw clipless pedals on and they just dominated. Mm-hmm. Like, Christophe Levesque was still smoking people, I think, on flat pedals for quite a while. There was a lot of people that were, you know, that transition period where a flat pedal guy would win and then a clipless guy would win and whatever. And if clipless pedals were that much better, then you would have seen a dominance right away from all the people that went on clipless pedals. And we just didn't see that in AA Pro at the time. So that led me to you know, have this philosophy where it's more about the technique. Like, if you have the technique, you don't need the clipless pedals as much. If you have crap technique, you need the clipless pedals to make you faster. So again, don't buy your way out of a problem. Fix it from a fundamental standpoint.
That's a great explanation there. That's the pedaling technique. It's overlooked. You go ahead, Melissa, and ask that.
Okay. I didn't know when you would put it in. That's why.
Just go ahead.
All right. Well, Tim had another question in the chat. He wanted your thoughts, Jake, on manualing versus jumping through.
I don't necessarily have any opinion because it just matters, right? It matters on like what obstacle you're trying to get over. Oftentimes you can manual something probably faster than you can jump something. But in my opinion, you should be able to do both of them, and you should encourage, definitely, especially if we're talking about young kids, mm-hmm. encourage your kids to jump something. Like, don't just be worried about the fastest way around a track all the time. Cause if that's all you do with young kids is like teach them the fastest way around a track and it's always manualing for them, mm-hmm. then that's all they're going to be decent at. They're not going to be good jumpers. Cause eventually, like, you get to elite pro and you're riding these super cross tracks, you better be a good jumper, right? So be good at everything. Have everything like in your bank of knowledge. You're able to do whatever it takes to get over a jump. That's really who wins, is the most adaptable riders. Someone that can jump something, that isn't scared to jump a big jump, or someone that can pull up and, you know, pull manual a jump that no one else can.
When you're watching the race, do you like to see like a real steezy pull manual, or do you still like to see him just boost it and get over him?
I appreciate everything. Like, I geek out on watching these riders like be able to like tap manual something so smoothly and quickly, and stay so low and suck something up. That's really cool. If you go back on my Instagram, I think it was last year at Grands, maybe it was the year before, I did a little technique breakdown of Barry Nobles doing a tap manual over this double.
I was just going to bring that up because I was looking through some of your stuff earlier, just kind of, you know,
prepping a little bit.
That,
pay attention.
That is really cool. If you didn't see that, Justin, you need to find that, because he shows it first, like full speed. And if you're watching it, you don't even really notice what he's doing. And then Jake takes it and slow mo's it really slow and points out what he's doing. And it is cool.
Is it under the Spark page or your page person?
Yeah, it should be on the Spark Instagram page, I believe, actually.
Okay, well, he's looking that up. Let's shift gears real quick, and then we'll come back to that. Another question from the chat. Damon Sprague was wondering if you, kind of a equipment question, do you recommend longer cranks with flats versus the clips?
Yeah, I know Damon geeks out on this. I am the last person you want to ask about equipment, to be quite
okay,
honest.
Well, that's an honest answer.
Yeah. I really
ride what's comfortable, right?
Yeah. I've heard people say run the longest cranks you can, and I've actually I felt like I had better success on the long cranks, but I don't know. I haven't tested it enough. I'm too cheap to buy multiple sets of cranks.
You and most riders.
Maybe somebody would let you borrow some.
Helium can send some, and then he can do a test on them.
There you go.
Is this did I find the right one? This one right here?
Yeah, I think this is it. Yeah.
I'm gonna go full screen on it real quick, and we'll you can, for those listening to the podcast, it's on the Instagram page. But I can turn the audio on if you want, or if you want to talk over it.
I think I can talk over it. So yeah, the cool thing about this is you can see, like, we think of a jump, right? We think of like what people do over a jump happens at the lip of the jump, but what he is doing is way before the lip of that jump. He puts a ton of energy into the flat ground about 15 feet before it, and that allows him to actually, he actually jumps over the lip of that double. Like, if you see that flash happen mm-hmm. from the cameraman, and he completely skips the top of that lip, which is super cool. And to do that at speed, not only that, but then to land in that tap manual right on the backside of it so perfectly. When you watch like riders that can do that, it's just so cool. Like, I don't know. I geek out on that so hard.
You know
what? So right there, he puts a lot of, see how he's down?
Yeah.
And then he's up, and then now he's back down again, right? Like, so yeah, he's completely, all of his energy goes into the ground before he even goes up that transition. And then there he's actually jumping.
See right there, his back wheel is off the ground in the flash of the camera. See his back wheel's in the air?
I think his front and his back might be, but
yeah.
You know what it reminds me of is back in the 80s, we did this thing. It was called pre-jumping. I don't know if that's...
Is that like pre-registration or something?
No. Basically, the easiest way to explain it is you bunny hop before the jump. So when you're in the air, when you come down, you're landing on the top of the jump instead of riding the lip of it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the easiest way I can explain it. But that's
essentially almost... that's it. Yeah, you're trying to get your momentum to go straight forward rather than up. So, you know, you can jump something very fast as well, but you've got to kind of like, you got to suck it up. And it's kind of the same thing. You are putting, if you're going to jump something and stay low, you got to put energy into the ground before you go up that transition, and you have to suck it up basically the same way. And you rely on your speed and your momentum and the trajectory to carry you straight forward rather than just getting stiff going up a lip and using your speed to take you over. Because if you do that, it's going to be slower than manual in most cases. But the key point is get good at everything. Like the better bike rider you can be, the more that's going to pay off. And a big something that I'm going to release a video in the next, hopefully, couple of days. And it's appropriate for this time of year. You know, there's probably a whole I don't know how many riders were there at Grands this year.
Riders?
You guys know?
No.
Yeah, riders.
Not rider count, no.
No, no clue.
No, but the motos.
I don't know. So several thousand, right?
Yeah, probably for sure.
Oh, yeah.
3,000-4,000 kids.
Mm-hmm.
And how many people made the main? I don't know. But there's a lot of people that didn't make the main, and they're bummed out, especially kids, right? They're bummed out. Another year didn't make the main at Grands, you know, didn't make mains at any nationals this year, whatever, right? So they're focusing on their performance and their, you know, their finishes. But really, like, I want to emphasize, like, okay, yeah, you're undersized now. Those kids that are beating you now are taller, they're faster, they're stronger. And there's really not a whole hell of a lot you can do about it at this moment, but you can work on your skills. So I really encourage parents and kids, get out there and go send the double. Go send it higher than everyone else in the middle of the race. And if you lose, who gives a shit, right? Like, get out there and get good at that kind of stuff. I worked with some kids up in Washington that they were both the boys were undersized, the Altendorfs, Jasper and Kai, and they were both undersized, but they had a ton of skill. And I was just like, they were bummed that they were getting beat. And I was like, get out there and go send that double. And they would. And now both of those kids are really good. They hit their growth spurts. And like, once they hit that growth spurt, it was on. They were like right up there making Grands mains or, you know, top level expert riders. You have a window of opportunity to learn skills, and if you wait too long, you're going to miss it. And so that's it. Like, don't worry about like your finishes, but you can't really affect that too much other than pedal pumping your way around a track. And that's just not fun. You see so many kids that's all they do. They worry about their finishes. So they go out there and they just pedal pump around a track. And they never learn any skills, and it's never any fun, because once you start getting your ass kicked and you're not jumping anything, you're not like doing cool shit on a track, it's not fun anymore. And guess what? They all eventually quit. So that's my rant.
No problem.
Hey, that's part of it.
Normally Chris has them. Who's your favorite, rider to watch ride or race?
Man. You know, back in the day, it was Brian Foster.
Oh, hell yes.
So I was like co-factory Schwinn. I had like the whole Schwinn thing, and I had the bike. And so I just loved watching him. Obviously I love watching him dirt jump and stuff, but watching him race, like he was just so far advanced compared to all the other riders. Mm-hmm. He was super good at turning. He would make moves like crazy. People should be studying him now for like how good he was at corners back then, especially on like those crappy tire, you know, like whatever in dirt, on crappy tracks, on crappy equipment and stuff. But he was amazing at just riding a pack. Again, like just getting over jumps, he could jump stuff super fast. His skills were unbelievable. And man, I don't know, like so many people are, especially now, they're shit. You can see 100 people that are maybe not Brian Foster level, but like they're, you know, they race as good as Brian Foster ever did. They might not be able to dirt jump and all that other stuff, but like if you're good now, you have all these skills. You're, you know, back in the day, you could rely on your first straight pull to win you a race. And now it's like, you have to have everything. So I really like just watching everyone now.
Yeah.
I was big in Tyler Whitfield. He was like one of my buddies. I loved watching him. He was so effortless and so smooth and so confident. I remember like we would be like at the track after a race and he would be eyeing something up and he'd tell me about it. And I'd be like, dude, I don't know. Like, that seems stupid. Like, I don't want to see you hurt yourself. Right. And I'm trying to talk him out of it. And then he goes and does it. And I'm like, holy shit, I'm never going to say anything again. I'm not going to tell anyone that they can't do something. Cause I realized like what he sees is different than what I see. So I loved watching him ride.
Yeah, I remember he would have those videos like after the national, he'd hang out and he'd release them on social media. And there was one he nose manualed a double, just right on his front wheel, and he did some insane line off of it. And then, like, that kid was he's so good, and you can't take away from Foster. Now my question is, did you have the airwalks though to match the whole Schwinn uniform?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, of course. Yeah, I had a couple sets of Foster Brothers shoes, and I even had the. I don't think they were Foster Brothers. I think they were just Airwalks, but the patent leather ones were pretty tight. Remember those?
That was in the 90s. That was when I was not involved. So you and Justin can talk that part.
I wore those to school. Nice. I wore those to high school, and I thought I was the shit. I was like, oh, man, everyone's going to love these.
I were going to find those things, and God, my mom took me to so many stores to find them.
Oh,
and we left my hometown and ended up in Lansing, Michigan, which is 40 minutes from my hometown. And we'd go to bike shops, skateboard shops, and finally found them in Lansing.
Really?
So
you had to get those at the actual skate shop or the bike shop?
I think they were at a store, like a bike shop in Lansing. I can't remember. Them bad boys.
They should bring those back. I would still wear them for sure.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
100%. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's like finding Vans back in the 80s. You had to go to a skate shop or somewhere to find Vans back then.
I went to House of Wheels. He had them all the time. House of Wheels. Every day. All day, every day. That he was open.
That he was open.
What do you think of the racing now, like today? Like what you saw at the Grands, what do you think of that?
To be quite honest, I find it boring from a spectator perspective. And it has nothing to do with the tracks necessarily. I just think everyone's so damn good. Like, they're all so good. Like, all the pros are so good that it you don't have the passing. Like, you know, you don't have like these big moves. Like back in the day, you would see people go from first to last and last to first and stuff like that. It's pretty rare when that kind of stuff happens, and that's just purely because everyone is so damn dialed right now.
Yeah.
From like elite pros. Actually, like, you know, the vet pro class is probably the best racing to watch. You know, you have a little bit more discrepancy. Like, people have kids and day jobs and stuff like that, so they're not quite as dialed in as a lot of those guys probably once were. So that's why I think vet pro is the best. to watch. Mm-hmm. They still have a lot of speed and skill and everything, but not quite as dialed.
I would kind of agree with that. I enjoy watching the vet pro and the women's pro as well. I don't know why.
The women have come such a long way in the time that I've been in the sport. It's unbelievable how good the women are, and it's awesome to see, actually. The other thing I was gonna say, like, I'm super bored by the tracks today. Like the three straightaways, the same layout at every track. Like, kill me if I ever have to pay to go to a national to ride one of those tracks ever again. I love BMX. I love the sport. I love the idea of it. I just hate the layout of the tracks and how they're all standardized today. I hate UCI Supercross tracks. They all look exactly the same. They were cool 10, 12 years ago when they were kind of new and like we were seeing these big jumps and everything. Oh. But holy hell, I do not want to watch that stuff. You know, I want to see weird shit on the track again. I want to see, and I'm not even coming at like from an old school perspective. I wasn't around for like old school flat turns and stuff, but throw a flat turn on these tracks and let's see, like, let's challenge these riders. I want to see a bunch of elite pros go through a flat corner.
It would be interesting to see that, wouldn't it?
Yeah. I want to see like weird S turns and just get, just do something different every once in a while, for God's sake. That'll make all these other tracks better. But like, if we just all the tracks are exactly the same, I couldn't care less about it, to be honest. And that's really why I've gotten into mountain biking. I love natural trails. Like, hey, there's a bunch of rocks there. Let's try to ride down it, and you know, and it's different every single time.
Right.
So I wish we had a little bit more mountain bike in us as a sport.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was going to say, Jake, you know, thinking about the flat turn thing, it'd be awful difficult to do a flat turn in clip shoes.
There you go.
Yeah, for sure.
That's where the foot goes out, man.
Well, the last year or the year before, Melissa, when Akron had the pro stop, and you know, that track wasn't laid out, you know, in the M or W style. And it was pretty exciting to be like, oh, like they're going to be running on a non-traditional track. And I know this year Waterford Oaks has a pro stop, and their track still starts here and ends in the next county over, and it's all over the place. And it was interesting, and it's going to be interesting too at Waterford, but at Akron, to see that where it wasn't 180, 180, 180, then the finish line.
Yeah.
It was cool to watch those races. There were changes. It was a little different for them because the first turn was a 90, not a 180, so that was neat. It was good stuff, and I agree with you.
Yeah. Well, that's what they're going to get at Waterford Oaks. That first turn is 90 degrees. It's not a 180. It's going to be awesome.
Thank the sweet Lord. I don't know why everyone hates on these 90-degree corners. I think they're completely fine. Yeah, you're not going to make, like, an awesome pass in a 90-degree corner, but it sets you up for other corners where you could make a pass. And I don't know why everyone hates on these 90-degree corners. Gives it some flavor, for God's sake. Do something different.
I think it'll test the skill level a little bit, you know?
Just
because it's not what they're used to.
Yep.
Well, let's do the we're going to jump over to trivia real quick, Jake, and then we'll jump into our lightning round. Melissa, how's it going?
Pretty good.
Yeah, what do we got for trivia tonight?
Get down there.
All right.
Melissa's trivia question brought to you by Bombshell Racing Systems.
Man, did you get the chance to take advantage of any of their Black Friday specials at all?
I saw Bombshell had some pretty good sales going on.
50% off or something?
Yeah.
It's pretty wild.
Go check out their website. See, they might still have something going on over there. I don't know for sure, but it's worth running over there and taking a look at it after the show's over.
You're so funny, Chris.
I try, man. Like and subscribe.
Not immediately. Don't leave.
Don't you goddamn leave this show.
Please don't leave us.
Now, Jake, this question's going to be about you, so don't answer.
Okay.
All right. I got a sticker pack with some of our show sponsors hanging out in there. There are some Danger Snacks going out to the winner. Also, in honor of the coldest day that we've had so far, I got you a ghetto wear beanie going out to, well, no, I guess that's not a beanie, that's a knit-ish hat.
It's a winter hat.
Ghetto wear winter hat going out to the winner of this trivia. So we were been talking with Jake over the last hour plus, and he mentioned early on in the show what his favorite national track might be that was ridden in the past. So I would like somebody to give me the answer to what Jake said was his favorite national track back in the day. I'm going to clear this crazy busy chat.
Can I give it a little hint?
Not yet.
No.
Let me see.
I won't say the word. I'll just one hint about the track. 90-degree first corner.
Oh, there you go.
Hey, there we go.
Awesome. All right. While we're waiting for an answer in there, it's time for Lightning Round. And Lightning Round is brought to you by 110 Nutrition. Jake, what we're going to do is we're going to rapid fire some questions off at you. You just answer first thing that pops up. All right?
Okay.
All right. You guys, don't forget, head on over to 110 Nutrition, and you can use the discount code All Things BMX, and you're going to receive 10% off your order.
Get
all
your
right.
Greens and aminos and pre-workout and protein and all that stuff. Get over there and check those guys out.
Okay, I got the first question. Last movie, Jake, you liked so much you watched it twice.
Oh, shit. I'm not a big movie person. Oh, my God.
TV show, YouTube, we'll take it all.
Oh, man. Oh, shit.
BF it.
Yeah, I have watched that twice. We'll go with that, yeah.
Oh, okay.
I don't know.
Brian Foster documentary.
Yes. Oh, okay. I didn't know.
Dude, you could play a song from that, and I can tell you almost exactly where you're at in that documentary. That's how many times I've watched BF it.
Break the Ice?
Oh, that's rad.
That's a different movie, damn. Right. Okay, sorry. Jake, would you ever go skydiving?
Absolutely.
Do you make New Year's resolutions?
No, not formally anyways. More of a focus of my year, but not a resolution.
All right.
That's a good one. Which celebrity annoys you the most?
Oh my God. Basically all of them, to be quite honest.
That's a great answer.
I hate celebrities. I hate people that think, you know, I hate movie stars that think they're doing something super important.
Right.
Shut up.
Right. Insert name here. Gotcha.
Yeah. I don't really care who you're backing for president of the United States.
No. Nope.
I'm making that decision on my own. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. So, shoot, where'd I go here? Oh, is your bed made right now?
Yes, there we go.
Yeah, I make it every day.
There you go. Do you believe in aliens?
I believe there could be.
There you go.
Okay,
good answer.
If you could transform into an animal, which one would it be?
Cheetah.
Okay, you got a speed thing.
Most guys do, but
yeah,
okay,
fair.
All right. If you could go back and give your 18-year-old self one piece of advice, what would it be?
Microsoft. I mean, that's myself.
Save your money.
Yeah,
all right.
That's good.
What was your first job?
Delivering pizzas.
Okay.
That's cool.
In my mom's car, which is super lucrative. You use all her gas and you just get all those tips.
Super lucrative.
Highly suggested.
All right, Jake, what's your favorite day of the week?
Friday.
Okay.
I mean, Wednesday. Wednesday when the show comes out.
And then Friday.
But Friday.
Yes, fair.
Okay.
Who is your hero?
Oh, man. I don't know if I have one.
All right. All right. Follow along with me. Okay. You pull into an empty parking lot, and you pull down a row, and there's spaces to park on the left and right side. Which side do you park on?
Probably right side. I don't know. I back into our right, the one on the right.
Okay.
Hey.
Why?
What do you drive? That's a bonus question that you back in.
A Prius.
Oh, I was going to say, I know everybody that drives a truck backs in. So
it's like an F-350 or something.
Yeah, no.
F-350 dually.
I don't know about you guys, but I like to park farther away from the door. I don't know. I always feel bad for parking close. Like, I feel like there's pregnant women or something like that should be parking closer. So it drives most people nuts that ride with me that I park farther. They're like, why don't you park up there?
You can walk. You got two legs. Let's go.
Yeah, and I don't want to see people or have people see me drive my Prius.
Oh. Hey, I bet the gas mileage is killer.
It is.
Okay, where am I at? Your favorite holiday?
4th of July.
Like it.
I love the summer. I don't know, something about 4th of July is always good.
Nice.
Drinking beer. Eating grilled food, riding bikes.
There you go.
Sounds good. Can't right about now.
Not argue with that. Yeah, especially right now here. What's your favorite sport other than BMX?
Race cars. I've been watching Formula One for a long time, well before all the Drive to Survive hype.
Before it was cool.
Yeah, I was like one of the few Americans that would go to races, and like I've been into it for about, I don't know, 16, 17 years or something like that.
So you said like the Michael Schumacher years.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep, all that. I did a little go-kart racing and stuff for a while, but quickly ran out of money with that. So
yeah.
Here I am back in bikes, which aren't much cheaper, to be honest, especially mountain bikes.
Right.
Who's your favorite team, Formula One?
I don't have favorite teams or favorite drivers. I just enjoy it. As I enjoy the engineering of it. I enjoy like how again Formula One is kind of boring because all the drivers are so good, just like in BMX. like, yeah, everyone's so dialed in. Once everyone gets to be so homogenized and exactly like robots, their performance is robotic, that it kind of like you have to employ these like engineering aspects to make the racing interesting or whatever. So
yeah,
I just enjoy the sport. I enjoy speed. I enjoy like all that kind of stuff. I like looking at, I'm actually doing another video on this, another article that, to kind of show like what us bike riders can learn from Formula One as far as cornering. So a couple things, I like to kind of look at different sports and like relate them to the sport that I'm in.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great idea.
That's interesting.
Interesting to read that one.
Yeah.
What was the last thing you Googled?
Oh my God. Good thing I can't look at my phone right now to tell you. Because I've been doing a lot of video editing recently, it was probably something like, because I'm stupid and I don't know how to do like a lot of things. And like you start getting into these programs and they can do like a million different things.
Mm.
So it was probably a Google search of how to something, not screw up my video.
Fair enough.
What do you call it? Yeah. YouTube University.
Right.
Yeah.
Right on. Sure.
We probably should have modified that question.
I'm going to just modify
it. Go ahead.
If you were to write a book not about BMX.
There we go.
What would it be about? Formula One. I know you. Live,
yeah,
you
I
live,
mean, if
eat,
it's not
breathe
about any bike riding, that I could be, you know, I could go the easy way and say like something with mountain biking. I don't know. I really don't know. It would probably be a coaching book, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Like
nice.
What I've learned from coaching, like because I went from completely sucking to running this gym and working with a lot of different people from young to old, and like and I've found that I have a fairly good knack at coming up with solutions on the fly to get people to do what I want them to do, whether simple or complex. and not frustrate them and stuff. So I'd probably do something on coaching for what it's worth. I don't know if it's probably all regurgitated information at this point, but I would probably do something like that.
Nice.
All right. BMX or mountain bike, I guess, because you're into both. Frame, would you be more inclined to go with a chromoly, aluminum, or carbon fiber frame?
Well, it's funny that you asked me this at this point. First of all, my frame is carbon fiber. I was always a chromoly or aluminum person. I was like, I don't want a carbon frame. Well, then last fall, I got a really good deal on a carbon frame. I'm like, all right, well, what the hell? We'll give it a try. Fairly smooth rider. I usually don't break frames, whatever. But I also went with some carbon fiber handlebars with this bike. And then just a couple weeks ago, I was doing this race, and there was this very first obstacle. It was a tall rock with like a bridge, and like the part that like you rode down, it was like a real steep bridge or whatever. No one else jumped it. It wasn't meant to be jumped. Well, I jumped it a couple times in practice, and it was going to be like, you know, how I was going to win this race, right? So then in the race, I sent it a little too far and went to flat ground, snapped the handlebar off, and almost, you know, took my spleen out with the jagged edge of the carbon bars, and end up crashing and hurting my ribs pretty good. But like, by and large, I came away pretty unscathed for how bad it could have been. But yeah, so don't buy carbon bars if you're going to send jumps to flat, would be my suggestion.
All right.
Okay. So avoid those, eh?
Would you rather travel back in time, or would you rather travel into the future?
Back in time.
Okay.
If you
feel like the trajectory we're on right now isn't going on.
So. Hard to argue that. If you had to change your first name, what would it be?
I don't know.
Thought provoking here on the All Things BMX show.
This is a question my girlfriend would ask me, and I would give her the same answer. I don't know. Like, why are you asking me these questions? I've
never thought of it before.
I don't know. It would probably be something like Butch or Bruce or I don't know. I have no idea.
Something like burly man name.
Yeah.
Something tough.
Yeah. Right. Or just, I don't know.
There you go.
So how you doing today? I don't know.
Yeah. Leave me alone.
What's your favorite type of music to listen to?
I'm like an alternative or like classic rock kind of guy. Not much country. I listen to like Sturgill Simpson and Chris Stapleton and stuff, like, but like a lot of the country I find garbage, and then like this new rap, mumble rap stuff, I don't get it at all. I know I'm way old and everything, but
no, we're right with you.
It's not music. It's terrible. Anyone that listens to that, anyone that makes BMX edits to this mumble rap, stop it. It sounds like shit. It doesn't get anyone hyped up. It's stupid. Stop it.
I agree.
The hill I'm willing to die on.
What's your favorite type of cookie?
Oh, chocolate chip is. Yes. Can't beat it.
Straight up.
It is.
Anything.
It's a goat.
Anything from Crumble. No. All right. Would your 12-year-old self think you were cool today?
I think so, actually. You know, like, at 12 years old, I probably thought my dad was cool. Retrospectively, looking, you know, now that I look back, he probably wasn't cool.
Not most of us.
I think I'm cooler than my dad was at my age. So.
Nice.
How about that?
I like it.
All right. Do you prefer?
Here's one instance. So I've got a 15-year-old daughter, and we were talking about music. This made me think about music, whatever. But I was, you know, I played some Led Zeppelin for her. I got her into like some classic rock and stuff here and there. But I played some Led Zeppelin for her, and I was just like, you know, I'm like, you don't dig this? And she's like, it's all right. And I'm like, you obviously haven't listened to it loud enough yet. If you don't listen to Led Zeppelin, you feel it. And I just cranked it up. I was like, you know, F yeah, or whatever. Just something stupid like that. Like, my dad wouldn't do that kind of stupid stuff with this kid.
That's fine.
But
yeah,
There's actually something to that, because you hear more of the instruments when it's louder.
Yeah.
You hear
that's what
more
I'm saying.
Of those little background, it's like, dang, there's some skill going on.
I need
on
some
here.
More cowbell.
There you go. Right on. Okay, so when you do you prefer to text someone or talk to them on the phone?
I'm a texter now, unfortunately. I was, you know, 10 years ago, I'm like, who the hell is going to text, you know, whatever. And yeah, I've come around where it's hard to call people.
Yep.
It's weird. Super weird. I actually, so my girlfriend and I were dating for like quite a while before we actually really did a whole lot of phone conversations. We're like, hey, we can call each other, right? Like, I don't know why. It's like we were just texting for quite a while. Now we have phone conversations. It's kind of nice. It's like a little throwback to like. Right.
I text Justin when he's down in the basement.
Yeah.
I come up for dinner. I'm not screaming at you.
We got last one for you. You ready?
Yep.
Your favorite Wednesday night live streaming podcast BMX show.
All things BMX. Come on.
Stroke right. The ego.
Gosh, at least you didn't say Rail to Burn.
Rail to Burn would have been acceptable.
Yeah, out of habit.
It's all right.
But no, seriously, you guys are killing it.
Thank you.
I'm going to start listening to more of these shows. I've caught up on a few of them, and you guys are doing great. Like,
oh, we appreciate
what
that.
What a professional show.
Thank you. Fun.
He said we're professional.
We're holding it together with some duct tape, zip ties, and Velcro.
On a good day, we have Velcro.
Funny, like about, I don't know, 10, 12 years ago, I was like, why isn't there a BMX podcast out there? Like, there was literally no BMX podcast. I bought the domain bmxpodcast.com and bmxracingpodcast.com, and I had a BMX podcast. I don't like talking to people that much. So, like, I couldn't be consistent with it. I just, like, shut it down or whatever, and I think the domains are probably sold off by now or whatever, but I was wishing someone would do a podcast like this where they had some good hosts and interviewed cool people and stuff.
Oh,
and unfortunately,
we got you guys.
And then you interviewed me. No, I'm kidding.
So we do have a cool guest this week.
Yeah,
right.
Hey, numbers don't lie. They've stayed all right up high show long.
That's right.
Speaking
Chris,
of,
you want to let them know who we got on next week?
Yeah, speaking of podcasts, and next week's guest, we're going to talk to Martin Ward, and he is the guy behind the Scores timing.
Yeah.
So those little red plastic things you see on the forks of some of the pros' bikes and some, well, now more and more people are having
all
them.
All over, yeah.
We're going to find out about those little guys and what they do and how you get one.
Yeah, and they're GMO had told us when he was on the show that all the nationals next year are going to be
they're
have
all
the timing.
They're so going to have it. So
we're all going to have them if you're racing nationals. So it'll be interesting and hear his everything he did at Grants. He was set up and he flew over from Australia and set up and was hanging out at Grants.
I'm talking
have about
to get one of those guys.
Yeah, it's kind of cool,
man. Timing is super valuable. I wish more people would understand that. I built an app. I had someone build an app for me years ago. And because it's tough owning an app and making it profitable, I've shut it down. But basically, use your phone to measure times and be able to, like, whatever. But people make these changes to their gears and stuff like that, and they just go, oh, yeah, it feels better. They have no idea if it's faster or not. So timing is, like, that's where it's at. You've got to time stuff if you're going to change stuff. Don't go the one thing you learn, like, when it comes to speed and performance – don't rely on feel. You're completely wrong most of the time.
Yeah, and that's actually that's true. When Mart and I were talking a couple years ago, we were going to be on, but there was things that just scheduling didn't work. That was a thing. His kids race. Actually, his daughter just won the World Cup, and that was one of the things he said is that he was with timing. The numbers don't lie, and he would work with them, and they'd be like, "Yeah, that felt better." And he's like, "Well, it wasn't any faster." I remember your app. Melissa used to film me on it.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
We have used it.
I remember messaging you like back in when you had it, and it was what the app?
Yeah. Is it still out there?
No. He shut it down.
Oh, okay. I thought maybe.
But you were like one of the first ones that knew how to you got with your developers and we're actually using the camera depths on it, and that's how you're measuring your, which was crazy because everyone, you know, set it up 30 feet, 60 feet, night, whatever, and all you had to do was just hit the, like, you just record and it knew. It's like when you, how you can measure something with your iPhone if you've never used that.
Yep.
Like, okay, that's whatever. He was using that with your time and your distance.
That's
so
cool.
You could start just a static or a stop sprint and take off, and it would tell you, like, this is your time to there.
That's right, man.
Yep.
Like it.
Cool. Yeah, unfortunately, Apple is greedy, and they take 33% of your profits or whatever off the top, and then they, and then if you don't know how to develop your own app, it's quite expensive.
Yeah.
Just word of warning to people. It's not an easy business to be in. But if anyone is out there and is an app developer and wants to do something with this, hit me up. I actually have some other ideas for different things that I would like to incorporate, especially like with the gate start. If anyone's like a real killer app developer, I wouldn't mind working with them if they want to go into something. So I have some cool ideas. I think that would help out a lot of BMX racers.
Okay. And we'll have the email and the website and all your social media links. They'll all be in the show notes. That'll be, you know, when you guys are listening, just go to the show notes, go to the description, and all that information will be in there.
On all the different platforms. So Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Twitch, whichever. Go in there and check it out.
Melissa, did we get a winner?
I did. Somebody was paying attention. Jeremy and Cynthia Thompson. Guest. Do you know them? Oh, okay. they said Cobb County, which you had mentioned in Atlanta was your favorite national track, apparently for the 90-degree turns.
Jeremy is probably my favorite rider I've ever worked with.
Nice. Well,
Isn't that Greg's home track? Greg Harris?
Greg Harrison.
Harrison, yeah. I think that's his home track.
I believe
that
so.
He announces that?
Yeah. That's the one Margie Hatfield runs.
Yeah.
So, Jeremy, message the show or any of us your address, and we'll get the prize pack out to you.
Eventually. Yeah. We're really far behind.
Yeah, thank you.
We are.
We are very far behind.
The Heartland Post Office is really slow.
It's not that.
I know.
But if anyone wants to sponsor the prize pack mailing.
There you go.
We got lots of prizes.
Email
we just
Jake,
need help with the
if you want to develop a develop the app, let us know if you want to sponsor the shipping. Hey, I want to toss it over to you, Jake, to close us out here. Any final words, shout-outs, or anything like that, we're going to toss it over to you, all right?
Wow, put me on the spot.
There you go.
No, thank you guys for doing this. I'm glad to be back into this. I had kind of a long streak of not being able to be consistent with training other riders and stuff. I had a very demanding job, and actually I started a new job this week. So it's going to allow me to be into a better schedule. And I look forward to putting out a lot more content for UBMX racers and then also some mountain bike stuff as well. And I'm going to try to kind of show how both of these things work together and try to give you some valuable stuff. So thank you guys for having me on the show.
Oh, absolutely. Awesome. Thank you. Appreciate
When you get something new and you want to share it, hit us up and we'll put it on our page. We'll share it for you.
Yep. Well, and we'll have you back on, man, if you want to do, we call it Moto 2.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. Oh, and I want to thank my mom for taking me to the BMX track for the first time.
Oh, there we go.
8 years ago. She might be listening. So thanks, Mom.
That's the deal. Hi, Mom.
All right.
We're good,
Chris. All right.
Hey, again, everybody, thanks for joining us this week. Join us next week. We'll talk with Martin from, I always script the name, Scores.
Scores, yeah.
Scores. So we'll find out about the timing system next week. So we'll do that. Jake, thank you again for joining us. Everybody, have a great week. Oh, like and subscribe. God bless you. Have a great week, everybody. Take care.
See you next week.